Thank you, Sharon. And hi, everyone. Happy Monday. this morning, a part of what I was doing this morning is John Troy and Trip Overholt are creating an e-book, which is a collection of some of their interviews that they've done on the Avant-Garde radio program. And they're going to have a chapter in the book that's the interview that we did. So they sent it to me to kind of proofread. So I was looking at that this morning. But as I was looking at that, I was reminded that coming up in a couple of weeks, Tuesday, May 22nd, what's today? Oh, today's the 15th. So we're talking next Tuesday, a week from tomorrow, Dove Fishman is going to be their guest. So I was happy that I remembered that just before coming in here so that I could say that. And their show airs at noon Eastern Time. And the website is wizardllc.com. So if you just go to www.wizardllc.com at noon Eastern Time, next Tuesday, May 22nd, you'll hear a familiar voice. Dove Fishman will be the interviewee. And this show is only going to be going on. That for some reason, they're retiring the show in June. So there aren't going to be many more shows. So if you haven't had the chance to listen to Tripp and John interview someone, it might be fun to tune in and listen to Dove. I actually thought that Tripp was the best interviewer that's interviewed me. I've had a handful of radio interviews, and usually they've done a little bit of checking into me, but for the most part, they didn't know a lot about me, and so the questions weren't real directed, and maybe since the questions weren't real directed, the answers weren't real directed either, but Tripp really did his homework. He asked excellent questions, and as a result, he got excellent answers out of me. And I've heard Chuck Hillig say the same thing, that he thought Tripp was the best person that ever interviewed him. So we'll see what he does with Dove. It'll be fun. Oh, and you say you think John Troy is moving to Sundays at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Well, that would be good, because I think their show is really good. They get a lot of great guests. And it would be a shame if it was just being dropped entirely. We'll see what happens, I guess. Okay, so we're here now for the 7 Steps to Awakening. And we are going to start at 195, which is where we left off last night. So I am posting the link to 195 in the room. And as usual, we will start with a moment of silence. Amen. All right, so I'm going to begin by reading quote number 195 from the 7 Steps to Awakening. Again, this quote is originally from a book called The Supreme Yoga, but today we might finish the Supreme Yoga's quotes because they only go through quote 200, and we're pretty close to that. We'll just see what happens. Here's what 195 says. When one thoroughly investigates all this, it is clearly seen that the pure consciousness alone exists and nothing else. It is beyond description. at the end of the investigation, utter silence alone remains. Last night, if you were here, you know, we were looking at the teaching not to declare achievement too soon. And if you listen to people speak about enlightenment or awakening, whatever you want to call it, you won't always hear the same descriptions. Sometimes you hear people say things like, well, I still experience emotions. The emotions just don't get stuck. You know, I experience them in the moment. They move through and then they're gone. And sometimes you hear people talk about they still experience the ego chatter. They just know not to listen to it. And then sometimes you hear this, that there's just utter silence. In the Garland of Guru's Sayings, which was written by Muru Ganar, but the guru whose sayings were really being archived was Ramana Maharshi. There's this part of the garland that, of course, I won't quote perfectly, but the idea was something like how magnificent or how beautiful it is when there is I don't remember the exact word, a sage, a master, an enlightened one, whose mind is so silent that he cannot even speak unless the divine... Oh, no, it didn't even say speak. I take that back. This part of the quote is coming to me. He cannot even think unless the divine provides the thinking. How beautiful or how magnificent is the one whose mind cannot even think unless the divine provides the thinking, because it is so utterly silent. In NTI Revelation, it ends by, again, talking about the experience of enlightenment. And it says, there will be no words unless they are given. Now, certainly I do not know from personal experience, what enlightenment is. But when I hear what appear to be these different descriptions, you know, some including emotions, even anger, some saying they still hear all of the ego chatter, they just know not to listen, and then some saying there's just this utter silence. Something in me knows the utter silence is the truer description of the state of enlightenment. Even now, you know, I do not experience utter silence by any stretch of the imagination. But it is as if parts of the thinking have been erased or are being erased. And some of you may have seen that I experienced some of that this morning. Someone on a group, in fact, it was the Avant-Garde Sages group, someone asked the question, what is the world to you? Asked it of everyone, of course. What is the world to you? And I realized I had no thoughts with which I could answer that question. There were none. I had not a single thought. I know that at an earlier time, if someone had said, what is the world to you? Well, I could have given an opinion, yada, yada, yada. You know, there was, of course, the pre-spiritual path opinion, whatever that would have been. And then there were even, you know, spiritual path opinions. Things that were learned and accepted as a part of the spiritual path. But this morning, there was nothing. There was a blank. It was like, I don't think about it. I don't have a thought. And so, if I can, at this point, not have a thought on some things, well, it does seem to me that not having a thought is possible. And of course, masters say that. You know, the great masters say that. That's what this says. When one thoroughly investigates all this, it is clearly seen that the pure consciousness alone exists and nothing else. It is beyond description. At the end of the investigation, utter silence alone remains. Why don't we go ahead and look at the journal? The journal says, if thought and perception are not simply accepted and believed, but if they are investigated and questioned with a mind that does not accept interpretation as an answer, investigation goes far beyond mind to the source of all things, including mind. Be not satisfied with mind's answers, no matter how profound, and realize the answer that comes before mind. So the term that's being used here is before mind, but that would be before thought, which would be the same as utter silence. And of course, what is being said by the Supreme Yoga, the book, and what is being said by the journaling is that somehow questioning and investigation gets us to this silence. And this morning I was doing some writing. Let me grab my book. This morning I was doing some writing up in the 400s. Number 447 and 448, I think, are the two that I was thinking of in relation to this, 195. 447, I wrote, one who is determined that his beliefs are true cannot be free of belief in the projection. And then the question came, is there firm belief here? And I looked and I said, no, there is no longer firm belief. Belief. It is seen that this type of certainty is foolish. And then 448, it continues, if belief is given to a little, belief is given to the whole. Remember this, one cannot be partly free from belief. And then this last part, really, listen to this. Also remember, questioning dismantles ignorance and illusion. So the parallel that was drawn for me in this writing was that, belief is the idea that I know something and that I'm correct about it. Whether that's a belief about the world or whether that's even a spiritual belief. And if I think I know something and I'm correct about it, then I will also believe it's projection, obviously, because it's projection will just prove to me that I'm right. But in order to be completely free of projection, and remember, all projections are false, all projections are not true, including the projections that point to truth, still ultimately they are not true. So in order to be completely free of projection, which means completely free of not true, and therefore left only with true, in order to be completely free of projection, I have to also be completely free of belief. and what this writing said this morning, and what number 195 says here, and what the Supreme Yoga was saying in the Seven Steps to Awakening is the tool that helps us become completely free of belief is questioning. Questioning. In fact, let me read just a little bit more from this morning's journal. At number 449, again, this question, it's funny that the question came up in the journaling because it also came up in Facebook. It came up in Facebook first, but then it was directly related to a quote in the journaling too. So you know how things kind of happen like that. So, so number 449, the question was, what is the world? And so I again answered for the second time today, I don't know. I can't answer that question. I eventually had to answer it for a third time today because the person who originally asked the question on Facebook came back and you know, kind of asked me again more directly, this time asking Regina. And I said, I know there's a blank here that could be filled in, but I would really rather leave it blank. But in the journaling, the question came up, what is the world? And I said, I don't know. I can't answer that question. And then what came in the journaling was, whenever an answer or a definition does arise, and it could be about the world as a whole or any aspect of the world, for example, a definition of my friend Lynn, right? Whenever an answer or a definition does arise, question certainty regarding that thought. But then listen to this part. I think this part is kind of important. If certainty is not questioned, assumed certainty may be present. If certainty is questioned, it will be seen there is no certainty. So for example, let's imagine that I have some kind of a definite opinion in my head about Lynn, something about Lynn. What this is saying is if I don't question that opinion, then there will automatically be belief. In other words, belief is kind of the default of not questioning. It's an assumed certainty, belief. But if I do question, do I really know this about Lynn? Is this truly a fact? And in fact, Lynn's the one that's been really excited by the Byron Katie questions lately. So the Byron Katie questions would totally apply here, wouldn't they, Lynn? If I start asking the four Byron Katie questions about whatever my thought is about Lynn, then what happens is I begin to see that actually I'm not certain about that. And the more we come to see that we're not certain, the more we come to silence. All of that chatter comes from thinking we know something. But if there's nothing, there's no certainty about anything, then there's silence. So questioning breaks up the mechanism of belief, the assumed certainty, the projection, and it takes us into silence. But it's questioning is an active process, because if we're not questioning, then we're just falling for it, or as it says here in number 195, simply accepting and believing, right? That's what happens in the absence of questioning, is simply accepting and believing. So again, number 195 says, if thought and perception are not simply accepted and believed, but if they are investigated and questioned with a mind that does not accept interpretation as an answer, investigation goes far beyond mind to the source of all things, including mind. Be not satisfied with mind's answers, no matter how profound, and realize the answer that comes before mind. We talked about that last night too, a little bit about the no matter how profound, don't fall for it. Remember? But no matter how profound. We're not going for a new type of chatter. utter silence. And there's peace in that blank. That blank that I couldn't fill this morning had complete peace in it. All right, let's scroll down and click on number 196 on the left. And I will also post number 196 in the room. And I'm going to take a drink. Number 196. The truth does not become clear in you until it is heard again and again and meditated upon again and again. The truth does not become clear in you until it is heard again and again and meditated upon again and again. That is the quote. Let's go to the journal and see what I wrote. Do not give up the search for truth. The mind would tell you it is an impossible effort, but that is only mind. Stick with it in trusting determination, as the heart asks you to. You know, it's kind of funny because I've done so much of this writing. You know, there's NTI and the teachings of Inner Ramana and the messages that came to Laurent and me and some other personal messages and the single quiet thoughts and now this 7 Steps to Awakening. And sometimes there is a thought that comes up that says something like, I've written all of this before. I've been through this before. And then the thought that follows that, believe it or not, is like, I should stop here and just get it. But I got to tell you, although that may sound, you know, like what a lot of teachers are saying right now, there's a definite feeling behind it that that's ego. It may sound good, but the definite feeling is that that's ego. That ego wants me to say, you know, it has like this guilt feeling, this judgment feeling behind it. You know, that I've seen this before. I shouldn't have to keep repeatedly seeing it. You know, there's something wrong with me that I can't see it once and get it. Right? And then again, there's this, you know, I should just quit here. I've done this before. And what's happening now is that we are seeing a teaching from the Supreme Yoga, and then I'm seeing my own teaching through me, that is saying that is not true. In fact, the Supreme Yoga, again, says the truth does not become clear in you until it is heard again and again and meditated upon again and again. And the transcript this morning that I was reading from John Troy and Trip Overholt, both Trip and John commented on with great appreciation the idea of repetition. They both also saw repetition as a necessary and useful tool in the process of awakening. And so it's funny that this thought should come up that says something like, I should know this. I've looked at this before. I've written this before. I've been here before. Why am I here again? That's where discernment comes in really good. And hold on, I'm going to let Jamie in. That's where discernment comes in as a really helpful tool, because until there's utter silence, there are thoughts. And some of those thoughts are thoughts that are pointing towards truth, and some of those thoughts are thoughts that are actually not. And sometimes it can be tricky. You know, the devil, which really is just an exaggeration of the ego, is said to be sly and deceitful, right? Some of these thoughts can be very tricky. And, you know, what if I fell for the thought that there was something wrong with me because I've written this before? I mean, look what I wrote at 195. I told you I wrote again this morning at number 400 and something, 450 or 449, right? What if I fall for the thought that something is wrong with me and that I should just quit now and get it? How can that idea be right? Can you hear how screwed up the idea is? There's something wrong with me. It has guilt and judgment in it. I should just quit now. How helpful that can that be? And get it. That leads into a false denial, a false enlightenment. But instead, we have this guidance. Do not give up the search for truth. The mind would tell you it is an impossible effort, and I know we've all heard that in our own thoughts, but that is only mind. Stick with it in trusting determination, as the heart asks you to. And actually, you know, what I have found is that if you drop the goal of enlightenment, this future goal of enlightenment, if you drop the idea that somehow being enlightened is good and not being enlightened is bad, then there's always a joy with what's happening, including the joy of inquiry, including the joy of circling around again to a teaching you've been to before, and everything else that comes up. And there's no hurry. There's no, hurry is a funny word, because you see, hurry is trying to rush off to a goal that you think somehow you're not whole or you're not happy or you're not good until you get there. You know, there's no hurry. There's no goal to rush off to. And yet, you're continuing with the practice. It doesn't have to be one or the other. It's not, you don't have to have a goal to continue with the practice. You let go of the goal. And you follow what is for you now, what you're being called to do now. And if that includes practice, well, then that's what's being enjoyed now. Living in the spontaneous flow. Jay wrote, I can have a cup of tea. Actually, he says with truth, 10,000 times over with no goal. Yeah, that's a nice thought. And Lynn says, being where I am now is the joy of enlightenment. Absolutely. So why don't we go to number 197 then? So you can scroll down and click on number 197, and I will post the link in the room. All right, number 197. Says, and this is from the book, enough of this confusing argumentation concerning unity and diversity. Enough of this confusing argumentation concerning unity and diversity. All right, let's look at the journal. As the inward search for truth continues, one thing that must be abandoned is the outward search for truth. As tempting as the stories of truth are, leave those stories alone. The little hope that rises when you hear of these stories is the hope that you can find truth outside of you. That cannot be done. Give up that search and seek only inwardly now. And again, I would just like to state that this is personal guidance from me to me. It is not meant as a statement for anyone else. Devin and Zoe have entered the room, or at least one of them. And now my phone is ringing. Oh, this is somebody I wanted to talk to, but it will have to wait. I will just have to call her another time. That's too bad we've been playing phone tag. The reason I say that this guidance is for me is because certainly there are people who are being guided to, again, listen to teachers and to read books. My guidance right now is not to do any of that, not to listen to any teachers, not to read any books. And this number 197 is referring to that guidance. And what it is saying, and this is very true for me, what it is saying is that there was somehow a little hope in me that, well, that I could meet someone who was already enlightened, and that through their enlightenment achieve mine. That's a thought that was in me. And I'm not even going to say that never happens, because certainly I have read stories of people who feel they've had that experience. So I'm not even going to comment on whether it is sometimes helpful to be in the company of enlightened people, if that can somehow help someone to wake up. I'm not going to say whether it does or doesn't. I don't want to get into that discussion. It doesn't feel at all helpful. What does feel helpful is to know that my guidance is saying that that thought in me needed to be let go. That does feel helpful. That for me to stop thinking that and focus only inwardly now, that was in my best interest. And so I'm grateful to receive this guidance. But like I said, I do not perceive this type of guidance of guidance that might be for everyone. So that's that. Why don't we just move on? Since this might not be universal guidance, why don't we go on to number 198? And I'm going to read number 198 in the Seven Steps to Awakening first. The hallmark of enlightenment is cessation of craving. When the latter is absent, there is no enlightenment. But scholistic, how you say this, like scholistic, only he adds a Y to the end. Scholistic, I can't say that. I'll call it scholarly. There is no enlightenment but scholarly, which is in fact ignorance or viciousness. The hallmark of enlightenment is cessation of craving. When the latter is absent, so in other words, if you still have craving, then there is no enlightenment. It's only a scholistic or a scholarly false enlightenment, which in fact is either ignorance or viciousness. All right, so number 198 in the journal says, the seeing that is God's has no desire in it. When there is desire in the seeing is human. So it's a very simple restatement, no big words that I can't pronounce. But it's the same thought, right? The seeing that is God's has no desire in it. When there is desire in the seeing is human. So that's really interesting, again, because we've been talking a lot lately about the desire to be enlightened. That's obviously a human desire. You know, you can imagine that God does not have a desire to be enlightened. But the reason I'm pausing is I'm looking at something different right now. There was this desire that propelled me on this spiritual path, which I described to you last night as the desire to know truth. I don't care what it is, right? Just please show me truth. Through NTI, for me, it became called the desire to know thyself. See, when I first started, I didn't even know that truth and self were synonymous. But through NTI, by that point, there was a realization that truth and self were synonymous, and so it became worded as to know thyself. And even when Inner Ramana was coming, although I don't think this message made it into the book, there were a few missing messages, but there was a message that came during the Inner Ramana process when he called it a bridge identity. This desire to know thyself was a bridge identity, a temporary identity that was helpful. In other words, it's helpful to identify for a time with that desire as your only desire. But when you're truly in God's space, awakened mind, that's God's space. When you're truly in God's space, there is no desire. And what seems to happen, as I'm looking at myself now, what seems to happen is, again, although there's no way that I would call myself awakened or enlightened or anything like that, not even close to that, but there is a greater absence of desire. I mean, like, I don't have to use that desire to know thyself to really drive my willingness like I used to. How else can I say that? You know, like used to, maybe I needed that. Like when I thought about that desire, it really pumped up my heart and it was very helpful. But I don't need that so much anymore. I'm not going to say I never do or never will, because I'm sure there are times. But instead now there's more of just a spontaneous doing, and there's a knowing of what I am to do now, and there's just this spontaneous doing of it, and there's this same consistent joy with everything. So that must somehow be related to the God space, right? So I don't know, you know, how this might be helpful to anyone. I would never ask anyone to force their desires away from them. I don't think that's at all helpful. And I certainly wouldn't want anyone to take this writing and say, well, you know, God doesn't have desires, so I'm bad for having this desire. Maybe it's just a light awareness to carry in the back, that desires will fall away. Maybe that's how it's helpful. Just to carry in the background whenever you see a desire in yourself, just to say, you know, this desire is human and I know at some point it will fall away because I'm not really human. Maybe that's how it's helpful. Just a light carrying in the back of the mind thought that this will fall away, this desire. The seeing that is God's has no desire in it. When there is desire in the seeing is human. It's not God's space. All right, let's scroll down and click on number 199. Lynn is practicing Byron Katie as we speak. I want to be enlightened. Is that true? Yeah, those questions are just genius, and those questions came from, you know, the divine inner wisdom, awakening, enlightenment, whatever you want to call it, right? We said earlier, you know, that there's absolute stillness, that, you know, something about how beautiful or how magnificent is the sage who cannot even think. But then there was that caveat of, you know, unless the divine wants them to think. And those four questions were thinking that came from the divine. All right, number 199 in the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, says, this supreme truth is established only in total silence, not by logic, discussion, and argumentation. This supreme truth is established only in total silence, not by logic, discussion, and argumentation. All right, let's look at 199 in the journal. When there is no mind, there is truth. I wonder if that's the closure of this journaling that seemed to have a lot of focus on the false enlightenments, you know, on telling the, I don't know if telling the difference is the right words, but on knowing not to quit prematurely, right? Knowing not to quit prematurely. So as long as there is mind, you know, if I say to you, I still, you know, the ego is still there, I just know not to believe it. Well, that means mind is still there. I can't say there is no mind, right? I can't. How can I tell you that there are still thoughts there, I just don't believe them? And at the same time say there is no mind. If there's still thoughts there, then there must be a mind. That means that this is not the truth that I set out to know. Maybe many shifts have occurred. Maybe God's space is here in a way that God's space was not here before. There's clearer seeing. There's easy joy, easy love. But if there are still thoughts, then there is still mind, and that is not yet truth. When there is no mind, there is truth. That's a pretty easy definition. The supreme truth is established only in total silence. All right, let's scroll down and click on number 200. I will read number 200 in the book. This is the last step one quote from the Supreme Yoga. Thus, O sage, it is clear that self-knowledge is beyond the reach of the jugglery of words. Thus, O sage, it is clear that self-knowledge is beyond the reach of the jugglery of words. Okay, and so what was written in the journal is, what is unknown to the mind can be known by you. Give up mind and see. So obviously the human thinks that mind and knowledge go together, right? In fact, the more I learn with this mind, the more knowledge I have. But of course, this teaching is clearly stating that truth and the word knowledge is actually synonymous with truth. Because if it's not truth, could you call it knowledge, right? Ignorance is synonymous with not truth. So truth or knowledge cannot be known while mind is still in place. That truth or knowledge is only known when there is no more mind. And so there may be a thought, well, if there's no more mind, can there be any knowing at all? Right? Because we think that we need mind to know. And what this says is what is unknown to the mind can be known by you. You that is before mind, right? That you. And instead of using the mind to worry about, is that true? Instead of using the mind to worry about or try and figure out what that experience would be, that experience of knowing without mind, this says simply give up mind and see, find out for yourself. And I think that's a fair statement of the path I'm on now. Find out for yourself. I did go through a learning process. You know, there's some learning that happens. And for a time, there's both learning and undoing happening simultaneously. But it seems like now I'm on a path of don't learn anything, only undo. And don't replace beliefs with belief. Like, don't take, you know, a belief that I may have had about the world before and then read in a book like A Course in Miracles, or even in, you know, talks with Ramana Maharshi, read about how the world is a projection and then take that on as a belief. Don't do that. Don't replace beliefs with beliefs. Instead, allow this contemplation and inquiry to occur and find out for yourself. Or as it says here, give up mind and see. Because even those spiritual beliefs, you know, when we, most of us, you know, some of us may know from direct experience, but most of us, I think, when we start talking about, oh, the world is just a projection of your mind, blah, 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 we're actually still coming totally from mind. We learned this. And I'm on a path now of no more learning, no more belief. Give up mind. Allow total undoing and see. In fact, I've really made an inner promise to myself. That doesn't have words to it, so again, I'm pausing. It doesn't have words to it, but the inner promise to myself, well, it just has to do with seeing, self-seeing. I won't adopt as true without self-seeing. I may adopt it as a possibility. I may even adopt it as, you could say, on faith or on trust, but I won't adopt it as true without seeing. I won't adopt it as a belief. So, that's the end of the Supreme Yoga's part of step one. So now we're moving into Sri Sankara. Oh, and we only have 2 pages of Sri Sankara, and then we move into step two. So we're almost done with step one. If you want to scroll down and click on number 201, we'll start Sri Sankara. And I'm going to give you a link. Number 201 in the book says, "The veiling effect only disappears with full experience of reality, and the elimination of false knowledge leads to the end of suffering caused by that distraction." So again, the veiling effect only disappears with full experience of reality, and the elimination of false knowledge leads to the end of suffering caused by that distraction, caused by false knowledge. All right, let's look at number 201 in the journal. Partially awake is not fully awake. So I guess we're not done with this don't declare yourself enlightened too soon thing. Partially awake is not fully awake. One who is partially awake may still drift into a dream and mistake that dream for an awakened apparition. Until all I know is oneself as a constant, changeless, direct experience, it is best to stay tuned to intuitive guidance, listening in openness, always. Again, I don't want to sell myself short by declaring some type of achievement too early. That's what this is all about. My prayer, my request, you know, back when I was 28 or 29, was, I don't care what it is, just please show me truth. And somewhere along the line, thanks to really the teaching of A Course in Miracles and the inner guidance of spirit, I came to see that truth is synonymous with self. And there have been a lot of magnificent shifts. But this repeated self-teaching is saying, and however, until all that is known is that self, that constant, changeless self as a direct experience, not as an intellectual I know, but as a direct experience where I never reach out with a hand and grab a calculator. Because I don't have the concept of hand and calculator as a belief. Until all I know is one self as a constant, changeless, direct experience. It is best to stay tuned to intuitive guidance. In other words, there is something in me that is leading me to that. Since I prayed that prayer, show me truth, something is leading me to that. It reminds me of the Rumi quote, whatever brought me here has to take me home. And so I need to keep listening to that. And for me right now, that very much means not listening to others. Very much. Because so many of the others who are, again, saying that they are enlightened, are teaching a teaching. And by the way, many of them are teaching the same teaching, so it's consistent. But they're teaching, a consistent teaching that is not what's coming from inner me. And something in me knows very, very much that instead of listening to them, I need to listen to self. That it is self that has led me this far, and it is self that is going to continue to lead until self or truth is all that is experienced. And I have to stay on that track. And if you know me, you know that that's all I ever recommend to anyone else, is that they listen to their self. Certainly, I love for people to learn discernment. You know, the difference between the ego self and this self that Course students call Holy Spirit. Because you need that discernment. If you want to listen to the self that's bringing you to awakening, the self that Rumi talks about when Rumi says, whatever brought me here has to take me home. If you want to listen to that self, you do need discernment. So that's a critical component that needs to be learned first. But once that discernment is learned, once you know your inner guiding self, then you know what to listen to. And it doesn't matter at all if the whole rest of the world tells you you're wrong. I'm certain that the whole rest of the world have told many sages that they were wrong. Buddha, when he started out, he found, what was it, five? I may be wrong. What do they call those guys who relinquish everything and allow the body to suffer as a path of awakening? I forget, there's a word for them. But he found, I think it was five of them, that he kind of followed and learned from and practiced meditation with for years, right? Let me see. Let me move this so I can see what Jay wrote. Maybe Jay has the word. He says sannyasis. That might be correct. That wasn't the word I was looking for, but that might be correct. But anyway, he practiced with them for years and years and years and years, right? And then one day he's in meditation, and I know many of you know this story. There was a boat going down the river, and there was a teacher teaching a student to play an instrument, a stringed instrument, right? And the teacher said something like, you know, if you tighten the string too much, it will break. And if you leave it too loose, it will not play. And he heard that, and he knew that this path that he was on with these companions was not exactly correct. He was really tightening the string too loose by depriving the body in the way that he was. And this is when he discovered what is called the middle way. He began doing things like bathing. In fact, he went immediately and bathed. And then a woman, a girl maybe, found him, and she had food, and she fed him, and he ate. These are things that, to his companions, these were like sins. It was like he quit the path. And certainly they told him he was wrong, and I believe they even abandoned him. But he had to know to listen to himself above them, even though they were originally his teachers. This is what we all have to do. If someone outside of us says something and our inner self says yes, just like with Buddha when, you know, he was listening to a musician teaching a student and his inner self said yes, right? Well, then by all means. But if everyone outside of us is saying one thing and our inner self is saying another, go with the inner self. Be willing to be like Buddha. Be willing to let everyone tell you you're wrong, and yet you keep trusting and following that inner self. So I'm reading from number 201. Partially awake is not fully awake. One who is partially awake may still drift into a dream and mistake that dream for an awakened apparition. Again, do not declare enlightenment too soon. Until all I know, at all times, in all circumstances, without a moment of exception, this is the goal I'm going for, if you'll forgive the word goal for a moment. I never forget. That you can't forget, because it's the only direct experience, right? The idea of forgetting isn't possible. Until all I know is one self as a constant, changeless, direct experience, it is best to stay tuned to intuitive guidance, listening in openness always, following myself. Or as Rumi said, the one who brought me here will have to take me home. We have 2 minutes left, and it looks like 202 is not short. So I will stop with 201. Actually, now we're down to 1 minute left. So I will stop with 201, and then next Sunday we'll begin with 202. I'm just looking to see if there's anything else that I can... Dove wrote, "Don't believe anything anyone says, including me." And he quotes the Buddha. That's a perfect... That's a perfect summation of what I was saying when I say always listen to yourself. Don't believe anything anyone says, including me. Which is why a while ago I was being very clear that one quote I was reading, that one journaling of it, was personal guidance for me may not apply to you. I don't like it when people, quote, copy me. There are people who do that or have done that in the past, and I don't like it because sometimes it is quite clear it's not their guidance. And instead of finding their guidance, they're copying me, and that is not appropriate. It's not going to work. That's what I mean by not appropriate. Okay, we're out of time, so I'm out of here, and I'll see you guys later. Bye.